If you're not winning, you're probably not talking to people. That's the cause of it. If you talk to people, you're going to win. So you either get in the pool or get the hell out of it. Now, if you get out, you're going to lose. You're going to stay the way you are for the rest of your life. That is not an option as far as I'm concerned. The only option for me is do exactly what the person that's winning tells you to do until you find out they're lying or they don't know what they're talking about, and quit screwing around.
Podcasting from WealthWave Studios in Atlanta, Georgia, this is Leadership Now, the official vision and strategy podcast of WealthWave.
Well, we are really excited to have our guest on this week. We've been looking forward to this for over a year. I've been trying to get him on. And of course, we're talking about the great Bob Proctor. Before I bring Bob on and start asking our questions here, I wanted to sort of give you a little behind the scenes kind of a story that you won't read. You can read lots of things about Bob Proctor. He's obviously a very public person. But this is something you won't read on the internet because it's a private story between Dawn and myself and Bob and some of our other friends. So what it was is 1998, I was just starting out as a speaker, 32 years old. My business partner, Bill Gove, was 85, father of the industry, but trying to get back in the business. And Bob knew what we were trying to do. And he called us up one day, and I think it was late 1997. He said, hey, I got a speaking gig for you. And 7,000 people, Kansas City. You guys work on Friday night, open the convention at 9 o'clock at night. And then I work at 9 o'clock in the morning after that. So we were thrilled because we had just put out this album called Everything You Need to Know About Speaking. Mm-hmm. And we were trying to sell it for $200. And our cash back then was going down fast. And we needed a boost. Yeah. And Bob said, okay, I'll see you in Kansas City. So we started, Bob introduced us, gave us a big introduction on stage. And it was fabulous. And the audience was great. And they liked the speech. And afterwards, I held up the album and said, and you remember, Dawn was working in the booth, getting ready. We had a booth right next to Bob's in the exhibit hall.
Wow.
And so I told the audience, come on up afterwards. And it was the end of the night, you know, for the convention. And come up and see our album. And so 600 people lined up at the gate, the convention hall. And they locked the gate because it was 10 o'clock at night.
Oh, my gosh.
600 people turned away, so we sold nothing.
Right.
And so I get back to the hotel, and I called Bob in his room. I said, told him a story, and he said, okay, don't worry about it. I'll figure something out. I'm out at 9 in the morning. Just be there at 9 in the morning. So me and Dawn and my mom and dad, and Bill Gove, of course, were there in the nosebleed. And Bob gets on stage, and he says, hey, and he holds up our album. He says, how did you like, you know, Steve and Bill last night? And they cheered and everything. And Bob said, I'll tell you what. They locked the exhibit hall last night, and you need this album. As a matter of fact, you need this album so badly that our booth is next to the Gove Seabold booth. If you only have $200, you need to buy their album and not mine. Bob had a new album out, and he had thousands of them, it looked like, in the booth, and we had like 80. and so they did. They lined up, and they bought our album at 600 and something people, and they bypassed, in some cases, Bob's booth, and Bob's business partner was livid.
Mark was upset.
He was very upset at Bob. That $127,000 we made that day launched our company. Sure. I mean, that literally gave us the chance to be in business in Bill's last 5 years of his life. And I've thanked him 25 years ago. I don't know how you thank a guy for doing that. But that's who this gentleman really is behind the scenes, not the public persona, but the real man. And so, as always, Bob, we appreciate you. We love you, and we appreciate you being on the show.
You know, that's interesting. I was still thinking, I can still hear Mark.
He was unhappy, Bob.
Who was working with me at the time. We had put this album together just for this conference. We were going to sell it. No one bought ours. They all bought Bill. And what really made him upset, I went and stood at Bill's and Steve's booth. I didn't stand at ours. The people were all going there and buying
it.
Right. Yeah, I think he's still upset about that.
You were like a magnet, Bob. They were just over to you right away.
That was good. Bill deserved that.
Bob tells me the day, about a week before, he says, you got to build a wall of them, bring all the albums you can build. And so and you'll have a display and we'll put them right next to it. And so I get there. Remember, you were with me.
Yeah.
We got there and we looked at Bob. He's got literally, you must have had 2,000 albums on that booth, Bob. Some crazy. Mm-hmm. Like it was a wall of Bob Proctor, this album. And he goes, we had 80, because that's all we can afford to print and so record. And so Bob says, where's the album? So what's this? And I go, that's everything we have. And he goes, oh, boy. Okay. Remember, you sold them that first day before we even went on stage. The 80 were gone.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That was good.
Yeah, yeah.
That was good.
That was a great night. So, Bob,
that was a good night for Bill.
Oh, yeah.
It was a good night. He deserved that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
He was such a good guy, yeah.
Well, he talked about that till the day he died, Bob. You know that. Yeah, what a guy. Mm. Well, so tell us how you got started in the business, Bob, for people that don't know your story. It's been, what, 50-something years? How'd you get started in this whole thing?
It was last October, I started 60th year of studying this book. Mm. It was October the 21st, 1961. And a man gave me this book, Think and Grow Rich. And you'll see over my shoulder here are all the original books, all the little red books there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're all Napoleon Hill's original ones, 1928. But at any rate, the man gave me this book and he said, Bob, if you'll do exactly what I tell you and read this book every day, he said, you can have anything you want. Well, no, I didn't believe that. First of all, I was broke. I think I was earning $4,000 a year and I owed $6,000. I mean, I was not in good shape. And when somebody tells you you can have anything you want, you know, I just didn't believe it. But you know, I believed him. And I don't know why, but I started to do exactly what he told me. And my whole life changed. Within a year, I was earning $175,000 a year, and that was cleaning floors. But I was reading this book every day, and I was cleaning offices. But, you know, in less than 5 years, I was cleaning offices in Toronto, Montreal, Boston, Cleveland, Atlanta, in London, England. And I was earning over $1 million a year. And, you know, I was thinking, knowing I was going to do this, if the people come into your organization do exactly what you and Don tell them, they can have anything they want. Mm-hmm. Now, if a person's struggling, they probably don't believe that. And I can understand that. Because most people let their present results control their thinking. And if you let your present control your thinking, you're never going to have more than you've got. What you've got to do is sit down, decide what you want. I got a card in my pocket. I've had a gold card in my pocket every day since October the 21st, 1961. And everything I've written on the card, I've achieved. I would suggest you do the same thing.
Where'd you get the gold card? Where did that come from, Bob? Did you come up with that, or was that in the book?
No, it's in the book. It tells you to write your goal on a card.
It does.
And okay.
There's a funny story behind this. Years ago, way back in the early 60s, if you went in an airport, they had little machines. For a quarter, you'd get two pieces of plastic that's sticky on one side. And people would put a picture in them. Well, I would take and I'd write my goal, and then I'd put these two pieces of plastic on it. But all the sticky, gooey stuff would work its way out to the edge. And so you had a card in your pocket with a bunch of stuff stuck all around the edges. And I was working at Nightingale Conant in the late 60s. I went over to Dorothy Perro, run the warehouse at Nightingale Conant. I said, Dorothy, can you get me a little plastic card like this or a sleeve? And she said, sure. And so that's what she did. She got me these little cards made or sleeves. And I've had these little cards. I can't get this card out of here now. It's been in here too long. There it is. See, there's a little plastic sleeve and the gold card goes in it. And there's psychology behind this. When you write your goal on a card, what you're really doing is creating an image in your mind. So you're painting the picture with words on the card. But that picture is also impregnated into a group of cells in your brain. And when you put your hand in your pocket and touch the goal card, sensory factor touch is affected. It sends a light message screaming through the central nervous system and strikes those cells in the brain. They're activated, they increase the amplitude of vibration, pictures in them flashes on the screen of the mind. That's how language works. As I say words, we trigger pictures with the words. Like if I say your refrigerator, think of your refrigerator, a picture of a refrigerator comes out of your mind. And that is because you got a picture of your refrigerator tucked into cells in your brain. Or if I say, think of your car. Well, when we talk, what we're doing is triggering pictures in people's mind. If you have your goal written on a card, every time you touch it, the picture comes on the mind. And that's what people have to do. They've got to keep thinking of the goal, not the problem.
That's great. That's great.
Well, that's fantastic. Well, hey, when you started doing that, you know, when I started back in the early 80s, I did the same thing. I read Thinking Grow Rich. I wanted to turn my desires into gold, and so I took those steps, and I made those steps my steps. And it's fascinating to me that so much of that came true for me, too.
Well, you know, anybody that follows what Hill talked about, they've got to win. Because, you know, you stop and think. The man that gave me, Ray Stanford gave me the book. He said, Bob, think of this. He said, Napoleon Hill was mentored by the wealthiest man in the world, by Andrew Carnegie. Then Carnegie introduced him to 500 extremely successful individuals. And Hill studied them. Napoleon Hill and Henry Ford became very, very close friends. Well, he found there was a golden thread running through their lives. And this book is the essence of what he studied. So when you read the book, what you've got is the composite of the thinking of 500 very successful people. It stands to reason that you're going to win.
I also think it's like a blueprint because you can take your business and pattern it right after those principles.
Absolutely. It is a blueprint. That's exactly what it is. Yeah.
You know, Bob, you have coached so many people in the world, and you certainly have coached, you know, Steve and I through our careers, and we've done every single thing you told us to do. I've questioned it at times, for sure, but I did every single thing that you told me to do, for sure, and we've had a lot of success because of that. What is it in some people, or why would you feel some people are more successful than others? What is it?
Well, I think, first of all, you have to define success. I define success. Earl Nightingale, I think, had the best definition of success. He said success is the progressive realization of a worthy ideal. If you know where you are and you know where you're going and you're progressively moving in that direction, you're a successful person. So, and as Earl said, you could be a business person with an estate of maybe $2 million and you're working towards 10. And you're progressively moving in that direction, you're a successful person. Or you could be a student in school with a C and D average and you're working towards an A and B average and you're progressively moving in that direction, you're a successful person. One person equally as successful as the other. So it's not so much what we have, it's the direction we're moving in. But your question is still a good question. I believe that some people follow the rules and some don't. It's like Tom just said, you could look at this as a blueprint for success. Well, if you get a blueprint and you follow it, you're going to come out with what the blueprint dictates you're going to come out with. Mm-hmm. But if you keep thinking, you don't need that part of the blueprint, you don't need this part, and, you know, I'll do some of it, but I'm not going to do all of it, you're not going to win. This whole universe operates in a very orderly way. And if you study and understand the laws of the universe, you're going to win. Like all the little creatures out there in the world are completely at home in their environment. They blend in. They operate by instinct, which is perfect. We're the only creature on the planet, so far as we know, that's totally disoriented in our environment. And that's because we have the ability to create our own environment. Where the animals out there, they can see, hear, smell, taste, touch. We can see, hear, smell, taste, touch. There are physical senses. As long as we live in a physical body and correspond with the material universe, we will use our senses. But that just helps us get in touch with what's outside. If you're going to be the creative being that God created you to be, you're going to have to use your higher faculties. You've got perception, the will, reason, imagination, memory, and intuition. Now, most people don't even know they have those. I just repeated them, but if you heard me, you might not remember all of them. And you've got to develop these. Like developing one of your higher faculties, you exercise them the same as you might your body. If you want to develop parts of your body, it's the repetition of certain exercises. It's exactly the same with the mind. Like, I've developed my intuitive factor to a very fine degree. If I walk by a person, I know exactly what they're like, and I can tell them what they're like, and I do that all the time in a seminar. And I do it just to impress upon them what we're capable of doing. Your intuition enables you to pick up vibration. Your intuition is how the universe speaks to you. It's the way God talks to you. And when you ask a question, the answer is already there. You couldn't have a question without an answer. Well, what you're doing is you're posing your question to the universe will answer you. It's your intuitive factor that gets the answer. You'll see people that are very intuitive and some that aren't at all, and yet we all have an intuitive factor. Your perception, I think our good friend Wayne Dyer put it very well. He said, when you change the way you look at something, what you look at changes. Well, that's changing your perception. And if we were to sit down, or if anybody was to sit down and say, I'm going to work at altering my perception of the business I'm in. Well, they would see that the business they're in probably offers them much more opportunity than they can now see. But if they shift their perception and looked at it different ways, that's what Ray Stanford taught me to do with this book. He taught me to look at it different angles, different ways. Our imagination. Hill said the imagination is the most marvelous, miraculous, inconceivably powerful force the world's ever known. We've all got one, but we don't use it effectively. Most people use their imagination, they're using it against themselves. They're imagining something terrible is going to happen rather than something wonderful. So it's these higher faculties that make us the creative creature that we are. And when I started to study this, I had no formal education. I had 2 months high school. I had a bad work record and I had a bad attitude. And I started to study this and I started to do exactly what Ray told me. And I found I can take my pen, I can sit down and I can write out what I want and then I can go and get it. Mm-hmm. I sat down one day in a house on Maplewood Lane in Glenview, Illinois. This was in 1973. I had worked at McGill Cornett for 5 years and I just left. And I wrote down I'd build a company that operates all over the world. Today, the Procter Gallagher Institute operates in 91 countries. It happens exactly as you write on the card, if you stay with it. I think the problem, Don, is most people don't stay with it. That's why some are so much more successful than others. I believe that if you don't study, you're not going to win. I study here every morning. And that's a habit. I write out what I'm grateful for every morning. And that's a habit, you know? Mm-hmm. Success is habits. I think Albert E. N. Gray put it very well in The Common Denominator of Success. He said that the success is informing the habit of doing things failures don't like to do. And I think he's right.
Bob, talk about leadership. You know, so the people watching this for the most part are building teams, you know, teams of financial educators, basically. And can you give some advice about leadership and what it takes to lead a team, build a team and lead a team?
Well, I think that's the only way your industry works. Networking always works through teams. A lot of people think it's just selling stuff. It's not selling stuff at all. I see you're building an organization that stuff or services flow through. And if you want to win, you've got to be a leader. And leading is somebody that other people want to follow. So you've got to be a damn good example yourself. You've got to do everything we're talking about. And if you don't, you're not going to be a leader. Hill talks about it. He says there's two types of people in the world. There's leaders and their followers. And if you want to be a good leader, you got to be a good follower. All great leaders were great followers first. I'm a good leader. I'm a great leader. I lead a lot of people. But I'm going to tell you something. I'm one heck of a good follower. I will follow the advice of people that demonstrate they know better than me. And I'll do it until I at least reach the same level as them.
interesting. That's great.
That's fascinating.
You've just got to make up your mind you're going to be the best example you can be, and then you've got to mentor the other people. You've got to mentor the strong ones in your group, and you're turning them into leaders. And I think mentorship is transferring awareness from your mind to their mind. You're forever helping them develop a greater awareness. It's not important that you win. It's only important you help them win. If you help enough of them win, they're going to make you win. There's no question about it. So I think if you're not a leader and you're in networking, you're always going to have a small income. If you want to have a great income in networking, you definitely have to become a strong leader. To do that, first, you got to become a good follower. Really study the person that's leading you. I had the best leaders. Well, Bill Gove was one of them. Your partner. He was probably one of the best. I had Bill Gove, Earl Nightingale, Lloyd Conant, Leland Bell Van de Waal, Dr. Harry Roeder. I had some of the greatest leaders. I had a habit of picking people that were exceptionally good at what they did. And I did exactly what they told me. See, the good fortune to me was when I first met Ray Stanford. I was losing. I mean, I was a loser. And always had been. I was 26, never done anything. And he said, do exactly what I tell you until you find out I'm lying or I don't know what I'm talking about. Then he said, my way's working, yours isn't. Well, you know, that made sense to me. And I thought, what the hell? I'm going to do that. And so I started to do exactly what he said. And I found out the guy never lied. And he didn't know what he was talking about. He always had money. I never had any. And that's what first got my attention. Now, I've got lots of money. I think my earning money is the simplest thing in the world to earn when you know how. I guess it's like driving a car. If you don't know how, it's pretty difficult.
That's a good thing, Uncle Bob, since you're going to have to pay all the bills on that new house you're building.
Yeah. I'll pay it already.
You know, Bob, you taught me so much, more than anyone, about making money and my lack of consciousness when it came to fear and scarcity. When Steve first bought me the watch and we first started making money, and I would just listen to every word you said, and I really wanted to believe. And can you just share with our folks here a little bit about that mind money connection, and why so many people downplay it like I did? Luckily, I've matured with your help. But can you talk a little bit about the mind money connection?
Yeah, listen. People that say money is not important are people that haven't got any. The people that have money know that money is very important. It's extremely important. It's the only medium of exchange that's completely negotiable all over the world. I think you should tell them a story about the watch to start with. Let's go from there.
No.
Yeah, he should tell the story.
That was a long time ago.
I told you he was going to make you tell the story. I warned her, Bob.
Tell the story.
I was really young. No, I was. This was probably, like, I don't know, Bob, it was probably 20 years ago, but it was my birthday, and Steve bought me a Rolex watch and was on his way to a speech. So I opened the present, and I was like, my first thought was, we can't afford this. And we clearly could afford it. I mean, it was $7,000. Mm. And my second thought was, okay, first, nobody needs a $7,000 watch.
I have a Timex, a $50 Timex, Uncle Bob. So, you know.
Well, you deserve a $50 Timex.
Well, thanks. Yeah, thanks for that.
So so Steve was on the way to a speech, and I kept it in the box. I didn't even try it on. And he was so sweet. And he was like, you know, you can take it back. If you're really not comfortable, take it back. And I'm like, yeah, I can't keep it. You know what? I've got a $250, which I thought was a lot, you know, for $250. So it was the $7,000 anyways. Take Steve to the airport. I am in the parking lot of the jewelry store, and Uncle Bob calls.
Uh-oh.
And I'm like, hey, Bob. And he's like, Dawn, because he talks in that voice of God, what are you doing? I go, well, Bob, I'm in this situation. And I told him the whole story, and in just such a loving way. That day changed my life. I look at this watch now like he looks at his the gold card, and it represents my success and the willingness to help other people succeed. And it wasn't the money. It was me being able to move past my scarcity thinking that we weren't going to make more or that this was too much, it was too expensive, and I deserve it. And so now every time I wear this watch, I think of the success we've had and how grateful I am. And I just follow Bob's success tips. And I was going to take it back. And then I talked to Bob Proctor, and I'm so happy and thankful and blessed that we had that quick conversation in the parking lot of the jewelry store.
You know, I think you said something that is a key to it, Dawn. You said, I deserve it. Right. You see, I think some people think they don't deserve good things. They're God's highest form of creation, and they have the gall to think they don't deserve good things. You know, Jesus wore a seamless robe. That was the most expensive robe of his day. That wasn't like a tailor-made suit. It was beyond that. We've got to have a very high opinion of ourselves. And we've got to treat ourselves really well. I'm always very good to me. You cannot be good to somebody else if you're not good to yourself. And you've got to realize you deserve the best. Now, I'm not talking about being wasteful and being ridiculous. I'm talking about having a healthy conscious awareness. And if you want something and you would enjoy it, you should have it. I'm sitting in a beautiful studio. This is actually a television station that I'm sitting in. I built this place 4 years ago. It cost us well over $1 million. And somebody said, how old are you? What's that got to do with it? You see, they couldn't see me doing something like this. I was 84 or something like that. And I thought, well, they must think I should just sit and do nothing till I die. Well, then last year we decided to rebuild our house. We could have bought another one, but what the hell? The studio's in the backyard. I'm 50 feet from my house. So now we got a couple of $1 million sunk in a house. Now I'm 87 years old. I will enjoy the house. I love the studio. I broadcast all over the world from here. So you, as you get greater good things, you can do greater good with them. And that's all it's about. It's just about serving. And I think your goals yourself should be very high. I think they should be beyond your reach. If you know how to reach your goal isn't big enough. You've got to set goals you don't know how to reach, and that's going to cause you to stretch, to go higher than you've ever been. If you already know how to get there, you're going sideways. There's no growth.
That's great.
You've got a phenomenal opportunity in this company that you're a part of to set big goals, and you've got great leaders. I'm going to tell you, I've watched people that work with Steve and Don, I've watched them change their lives. I've watched people that were broke, today they're worth a few million dollars. And they're doing exactly what I did with Ray Stanford, do exactly what they tell you, until you find out they're lying or they don't know what they're talking about. They're wealthy people. They've got a very successful business. They got a great reputation. It only makes good sense to do exactly what they say. That's how you win.
Okay. I appreciate that, Bob.
Well, you know, Bob, we're building our business in the world's biggest industry, financial services. And we're so fortunate in many ways that it seems like everything is conspiring for us. There's the way the world has evolved, the way the stock market, the economy, the people's incomes, all these things. And most importantly, these schools, even in Canada, still don't teach people how money works. And so we get a chance to be that place of education and knowledge to bring them forward and then introduce them to products and services that can take them to where they need to go financially. Talk about that for a second and how you see that as our best thing.
I could talk about that for days. Listen, you can go to any educational system anywhere in the world. They do not teach you how to earn money. You could have somebody graduating from the most prestigious universities in the world with a doctorate degree in commerce and finance, and they could be broke. It's the most insane concept. How do we expect teachers to teach us how to earn money? They have never learned how to earn it. 80% of the people that are teaching have never done what they're teaching. Well, money, you earn money. You don't make it. The only people that make it are either in the jail or in the mint, or on the way to jail, one or the other. Everybody else earns money. Do you know, that's an interesting point you bring up, Tom. I was doing a seminar in Phoenix here, well, it was a couple of years ago now, I guess. And there's a doctor there that I know. I don't know him well, but I know him. And he was telling me he was going to leave the profession. And I said, why are you going to do that? Well, he said, the medical profession's all messed up. He said, you can't earn any money in it today. And I said, well, that's true. But I said, why did you become a doctor? Well, I said, he said, I love it. I said, what the hell do you want to quit for? I said, you know what your problem is? You think you go to work to earn money. That's a myth. You don't go to work to earn money. Working is the worst way to earn money. You go to work for satisfaction. I learned that really well on a visit that I made to the Earl Nightingale in Chicago in 1966. I'd been studying his material since 61. And I got an hour visit with him. And I was leaving his office and I said, Earl, what's the big deal? Well, he said, there isn't any big deal, Bob. He said, it's simply a matter of sitting down, decide what you love to do, and then dedicate your life to it. He said, the problem with most people is they don't know what they love to do. Well, I'm going to tell you, I got so excited right at that moment because I knew exactly what I'd love to do. I'd love to do what he was doing, and I would made up my mind I was going to do it with him. And 2 years later, I was his vice president of sales. I left a business where I was earning over $1 million a year, and I took a job for $18,000 a year. But I was doing what I loved to do. 5 years later, I was only earning $33,000. But I've earned millions since I left there. I got an education there. Earning money is, you can earn more money when you're sleeping than you can spend when you're awake, for goodness sake. You provide service to earn money. You go to work to get satisfaction. It's like Earl said, find what you love to do and dedicate your life to it. Now, odds are pretty good that you could love to do this if you really learn how to do it well. And then you get a ton of satisfaction in what you do, and you earn a lot of money too. See, in my business, you and I are in much the same business. We're just approaching it from a different angle. And you go to work and you do what you love, you get tremendous satisfaction. I mean, that's what keeps me going. It's the satisfaction I get from what I do. But the money you earn is from the service that you render. Learning how to work with money, how to earn money, what to do with it, provides a greater service everywhere in the world today than anything else you can think of. Because there's only 3 or 4% of the population that really understand how to earn money. Most people never learn how to. They think they go to work. It's the worst idea in the world. But they teach you that in school. Doctors earn good money. Well, I know doctors that don't earn good money. Lawyers good. I know lawyers that are broke. Listen, earn good money when you provide great service and you get better at it. This, what you're doing, Tom, you're providing one of the greatest services in the world. I have worked all over the world. And almost everywhere I've gone, I see people that want to do things, but they can't afford it. You should be able to afford to do everything you want to do. Life is very short. It can be a magnificent trip, but it's going to cost you. There's a Spanish distiller one time said, the good life's expensive. There's another way to live that doesn't cost as much, but he said it isn't any good.
So, Bob, when you're talking about money, can you give us some ideas of how people can upgrade their thinking and their consciousness when it comes to limited beliefs about money?
Well, I think there's only one way to do it, and that's through education. I don't think there is any other way. You've got to learn how to earn it. I don't think there's any other way. And if you want to learn something, you go to somebody that really understands. I don't know you, Tom, I've just met you, but I do know Steve and Don, and I know one thing, they both know how to earn a lot of money.
Right.
They've earned a lot of money. They've earned millions of dollars. So they're very good at it. So you go to people that understand. I went to Ray Stanford. He really understood. Then I went to Earl Nightingale, Lloyd Conant, and Bill Gove. I went to people that were the best at what they did. And I did exactly what they told me. Get a good book on money. Strange part, study Napoleon Hill's book. He doesn't talk much about money. It's an inside thing. You've got to alter your consciousness. And if you alter with, if you're working with a shallow consciousness, you're going to have low income. As you raise your consciousness, you're going to raise your income. You got to know what you're worth. And you shouldn't apologize for it. I charge a lot of money if you want to work with me. And I don't make any apology. And if you sign up to work with me, there's no refund. If you do what I tell you, I know you're going to win. And if you don't, I'll fire you. It's that simple. I have a no refund clause. I don't apologize for it. I brag about it. Because I want people to know if they come here, they're making a decision that's going to change their life. And if they don't win, it's not my fault. It's their fault. They're not doing what I tell them.
Makes sense. You know, Bob, I don't know how many times I've fielded questions about you all over the world for 25 years, and Donna is too, about, you know, they say, oh, Bob talks about money all the time, you know, he's so into money. And I always tell him, I always say, Bob doesn't care about money at all. I said, I've known Bob for 20-something years, and he talks about earning money and the mindset of money, but you never talk about buying stuff or anything. You're not a big spending guy. I've never, you know, you lived in the same
Except
house for
the
what?
Plane.
Except well, the plane. Well, he likes to travel. He likes his creature comfort.
Everyone should have a plane.
He likes his plane. Likes, yeah. Listen, but you're not a big spender.
I believe that you should have whatever you want that will make your life more comfortable. I spend almost all my time working because I can't think of anything else that I enjoy more than working. Right. I love what I do. That's why I built the studio right in my backyard. I'm 50 feet away from my bed. I love working. I love helping people wake up. But I like treating me well. I stay in good hotels. I fly in a private plane. I drive a beautiful car. I wear the best clothes you can buy. But outside of that, I give almost everything I earn away. I build schools in Africa. Every 2 weeks, I build a new school. I have a business partner, Sandy Gallagher, and she's adopted my way of thinking and giving. We give a lot of money away every week. And you do what you want with it. Money's not going to make you a better person. It's going to make you more responsible, probably, and make you more comfortable. But it's not going to make you a better person. And if you see people that, you know, hold on to money tight, they don't really enjoy it. I wrote in a book, You Were Born Rich, and everybody was born rich. Understand that. They're probably just a little short of money, but they're rich in resources.
That's true.
And I should love people and use money. And if you ever get that equation reversed and you start loving money and using people, you're in heavy trouble. I talk about it a lot because very few people understand it. I think Tom put it very well. They don't understand it. Our education system is lacking in that area. They don't teach people how to earn it. I love showing people how to earn money. I love watching them earn a lot. We have salespeople that are earning well over $1 million a year. And one of them's earning $2 to $3 million a year. And I love that. I think it's good because you can do a lot of good with it. And we do a lot of good with money. But I love earning it. See, earning it is an expression of the creativity that we've been blessed with. I give most of it away. I've told the kids I'm not going to leave them a whole pile of money. I want them to learn how to earn it, and that's what they're doing. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's great. Because that distinction, Bob, you know, a lot of people are confused about that distinction. They say, well, you guys talk about money and you're obsessed with money, but it's really not about the actual money. It's about, like you say, the creative expression and the service you're providing. Does that sum it up pretty much?
You know, yes, absolutely. You see, that doctor friend of mine, he thought you earned money by going to work. That's not it. You work for satisfaction. You provide service to earn money. See, a lot of people say these great singers are not worth the millions they earn. Yes, they are. Every time a radio is turned on and their records played, They're entertaining people. They entertain millions all over the world. They deserve to earn millions because it's their service they're rendering. And when you render a great service, you're worth a lot of money. Like, you should earn millions of what you're doing because the service that you're rendering is such an incredible service. And it's worldwide. Anybody in your business that's not earning much money, they're just not approaching it properly. If they're in your business and they're doing it right, they're earning a lot of money. And they should.
That's true. You know, our best leader is earning $3 million a year. And it's a guy I went to high school with. And I've noticed, you know, it doesn't make you a different person, but it gives you more choices. And he's been able to be more philanthropic and do things that are important to him, all because of having the means and because of following our system.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it's about. And you see, if he's earning that kind of money, he's getting a lot of satisfaction.
He is.
He's earning that much money because he's that good at teaching people how to handle money and how to use it, how to earn it.
Yeah. You know, Bob, here at WealthWave, we're holding hundreds of classes every day of teaching people how money works based on, you know, these guys writing how money, how money works, stop being a sucker. And as these classes are going on, we're educating people. I would like to know what your take is on using education to teach people how money works, but also to kind of help the financial literacy in the United States and in Canada through education.
Oh, listen, you take a look, almost all welfare recipients are third, fourth, fifth generation welfare recipients. Wow. It's a mental problem. It's people don't understand money. And I think the way you're doing it, I think is probably one of the best ways you can find, because you've attracted them by telling them they can earn money here. That'll attract people because people want money. But then you've got to show them how to earn it. That's what you're doing. You're educating them. See, education comes, as Hill said, from the Latin educo, meaning to reduce, to develop, or to draw within. And what you're doing, you're showing them how to pull the very best out of themselves and apply it to the business that they're in. It's a phenomenal concept that you've got going. Wealth Ways is a beautiful name. I looked at it, when I first looked at it, I thought, that's a winning name. Because we operate in waves. We operate in waves of energy. We are a mass of energy. And energy operates on waves. So it's all on frequencies. When you get onto a positive frequency or get onto a wealth frequency, you can't stop the money coming. That's why he said in here, in Think and Grow Rich, he said, when money starts coming, it'll come so fast and so furious, you're going to wonder where it was hiding through all the lean years.
That's right.
Well, but that's true. And if you're running hundreds of classes, you're being properly compensated from every one of those classes. And that's the way it should be. You should be able to compound the service that you render, multiply it, send it out. That's the beautiful part of networking. If networking didn't exist, it should be invented. You know. I'm constantly asked what I would do if I started over. I would go into network, absolutely. Because I was flying one time from Toronto to Kuala Lumpur. It's 25 hours in the air from Toronto to KL. So I spent 50 hours in the air going back and forth. I was going there every month for 5 years. And I always work with words and numbers when I'm on a plane. So I wrote down 1 and 6 0. And I thought, what is the big deal about $1 million? We fantasize about it. What would you do if you had $1 million, huh? And we've written songs about it. It's just a magic number. I had earned $1 million, and I never really thought it was a very big deal when it happened. I know other people that earn millions of dollars, and I thought, what the hell are they doing that's so different? So I kept playing with it, and it dawned on me, to earn a lot of money, you've got to have more than one source of income. And most people just have one source of income. If they're married, they probably have two coming into a home. And maybe if they're short, one of them or both of the couples may take on an extra job, so maybe they have three or four. And I kept playing with this, and I got it down to multiple sources of income. And everyone I know that earns a lot of money has multiple sources of income. There's no exceptions to that. Now, there may be, but I don't know them. And I got excited on the plane. I thought, I'm going to run a seminar where I teach people to earn $1 million by setting up multiple sources of income. And I get off the plane in Kuala Lumpur. I phoned Mark Victor Hansen from Newport Beach. Now, it was the middle of the night in Newport Beach, and I got him out of bed, and I got him excited. I said, Mark, why don't we run a seminar where we teach people to earn $1 million by setting up multiple sources of income? And so he and I started. He got a hold of Jack Canfield. We got Bernie Dorman. Lee Poulos started the old spaghetti factory. There was a group of us, and we started the $1 million forum. Do you know that's where the chicken soup for the soul books came from? They come out of the $1 million forum, and they earn millions on that. But we were teaching people if they would set up multiple sources of income. That is the secret behind what you're doing. People don't have one source of income. They've got many sources. And you can have thousands of sources of income. And that's what makes the difference.
Bob, what do you say to people that are watching this that, you know, they're trying to build this business, and like any business, there's ups and downs and struggles. They're kind of, you know, they got one foot in the water sort of kind of thing, but they're a little bit discouraged. What would be your, give them the Bob Proctor motivational
okay,
speech,
I'll tell you
Bob.
Exactly what to do. You got one foot in the water and one out. Either get the hell out of the pool and struggle for the rest of your life, or get all in the pool and start winning. Do exactly what they're telling you. You're screwing around. If you're not winning, it's because you're not working it right. That's simple. Listen, all you have to do is look at people that are earning millions. I've earned millions of dollars. If you give me an IQ test, I probably come out about the middle of the road. I'm not that smart. You don't have to be smart to earn a lot of money. What the hell? You already know people that are earning a lot of money that aren't very smart. It doesn't take smarts. It takes discipline. Discipline is the ability to give yourself a command and follow it. You set the goal. You write down on your paper what you want. This I will do. And then you discipline yourself to do exactly what Steve or Don tell you, and you do it every day. I went into the Prudential of America, and I trained their people to get in front of a prospect every morning before 9 a.m. and ask everybody to purchase $100,000 worth of insurance. That was way back in the early 70s. We raised the sales in the largest insurance company in the world by hundreds of millions of dollars. Discipline. Get in front of somebody before 9 a.m. every day. Ask everyone to buy. You don't have to sell everybody, but you got to ask them to buy. Give them the opportunity to turn you down. If you're not winning, you're probably not talking to people. That's the cause of it. If you talk to people, tell them what they're telling you to tell them. You're going to win. So you either get in the pool or get the hell out of it. Now, if you get out, you're going to lose. You're going to stay the way you are for the rest of your life. That is not an option as far as I'm concerned. The only option for me is do exactly what the person that's winning tells you to do until you find out they're lying or they don't know what they're talking about, and quit screwing around. It's your life. It's too important to screw around with.
I had a feeling that's what you were going to say. Yeah. That's what I was looking for, Bob.
Wow.
You're looking for a motivational speech, Bob.
Bob, just say what you really think. I mean, don't hold back. You don't
yeah,
have
you're,
to,
you're
you
know. Among friends here, Bob. So, Bob, speaking of life, you know, July 5th, you're going to be 87 years old. You've spent 50 years traveling the world, coaching people, speaking with people, doing one-on-ones, taking your time. And I would really like to know, and I've never asked you this before, but what's the single most important thing that you've learned, Bob Proctor's learned, over all these years of helping other people? What have you learned about being happy and successful?
You got to learn to give. You have to learn to give. And if giving isn't spontaneous, you're trading. Giving should be a very spontaneous thing. There's so many opportunities, and you should take every opportunity you can, give as much as you can. That is the greatest secret to success. You'll find the great givers are the great winners. I learned that a long time ago. W. Clement Stone started as a very poor boy in Chicago, hawking papers on the corner. In 1970, he was the wealthiest man in America. W. Clement Stone built Combined Insurance. Demi Clementstone's success came after he read Lloyd C. Douglas's book, The Magnificent Obsession. The Magnificent Obsession is about giving. And I looked at it and I thought, magnificent obsession. I always thought of obsession as a negative. But how could it be magnificent if it was negative? So I looked up the word obsession. An obsession is a persistent, disturbing preoccupation with an often unreasonable idea. If you become obsessed with giving more, and don't look for thanks, just give, you're going to win in a very big way. Now, I can't think of a greater service that you could be providing with this concept than the one you're providing. There's a greater need for people to understand money in the world today than anything else. A greater need than, and I'm not exaggerating. Now, I'm saying this after studying. I have a great library of books. Oddly enough, this is the first book I ever read, and I was 26. But I've got a phenomenal library in the house and in the studio. And all these years of learning, that's the one thing. You've got to give. And you've got to willingly give. My first mentor, Val Van de Waal, he said, you've got to willingly give and graciously receive. See, that's what you hadn't learned, Don, when you got that watch.
Right.
And you've learned that since. You willingly give and you graciously receive. And when you learn to do that, you start to live a pretty good life. Mm-hmm. Now, to do that, I think you have to have a respectable opinion of yourself. And it's not conceit. I'm talking about a healthy, conscious awareness. You are truly God's highest form of creation. You've got faculties within you that, well, you can do things way beyond the scope of your imagination. Nobody knows what you're capable of doing. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's great. Thank you.
Good stuff. So, Bob, what does it look like the next 5 years for you going forward? You'll be 87 this year, and then so say from now until you're 92, what are you excited about doing?
Same thing I'm doing right now. I'm going to keep doing the same thing. I want to keep building it bigger. We're not anywhere near as big as we could be or should be. this strange thing. Last week was the best week I've ever had in business in 60 years. Wow. Now, about 3 weeks or 4 weeks ago, I could have said the same thing. But last week we beat that. We're having phenomenal success while everybody else is screaming problems. Whenever it's tough out there, that's when you really got to turn the heat on. Don't let the marketplace control your success. You control your success. You control it from inside, not from outside. And you'll win in a big way.
What do you want your legacy to be, Bob?
I have no desire, nothing about legacy. I don't really care about that. I don't care what people think of me when I'm gone. I just want to do what I can now. You know, when I'm gone, I'm gone. I'll be busy off somewhere else. I really couldn't care. Listen, I don't care what they think of me now. I learned that a lot. You got to get to a point where you don't give a damn what anybody thinks of you. What's important is what you think of you. If you're going around concerned with what somebody else thinks about you, you're on the wrong track. I hope you like me, but if you don't, that's too bad, because I do like me, and I'm a nice guy. You should like me, but I quit worrying about what other people think of me a long time ago. I heard Reverend Dyke say one time, you got to get to a point where you don't give a damn what anybody thinks of you. It's what you think of you that's important, and it's vitally important. Now, your company teaches you to have a real good opinion of yourself. And then you go out and you share that with other people. Understand this. We're coming to the end of this. I can sense it. You are in one of the finest industries in the world. Money is something hardly anyone understands. Almost everybody's up to here in debt. It's absurd. And there's never been a greater time in all of history to provide a great service. People are screaming for help. Go and help them. Help them understand money. Help them understand how to earn it. and give as much of it away as you can. It all comes back. Emerson said the law of cause and effect is the law of laws. That law states whatever you put out comes back in equal measure.
I got to ask you this before we go, Bob. You're quite the movie star these days. You were in The Secret, of course, and then we did Beyond the Secret together, whatever that was, right? But now you have a feature. Now you've moved on to feature films, I know, with Robert Pascuzzi with the new movie. Can you talk a little bit about that? That's pretty exciting.
I am a priest.
I know. I saw the clip. I was very impressed, Uncle Bob. I was very impressed. You played the part well.
I just wanted that experience. I wanted to be in a movie. And, of course, Phil Goldfein's a very good friend of mine. He makes more movies than anybody alive today. And Phil's a great friend. In fact, I had a meeting with him this morning. And I just wanted to be in a movie. I wanted to see what it was like. It was fun. It was a great experience. Yeah. I was the priest that officiated at a funeral.
I saw the clip.
The guy in the world to be
a You're priest. A good actor, it turns out. I told Robert Pascuzzi, Bob, I said Uncle Bob's he's a heck of an actor. So you might have more of a future in acting as well, Bob.
Well, there you go. I might do more of it.
Multiple streams of income.
Well, you know, that's what William James in Harvard back in 1900 said. Act like the person you want to become. It's the actor's technique. And that's what you want to do to win. Act like the person you want to become. I study Stella Adler's book, The Art of Acting, and I think that's what every person should study. You got to act like the person you want to become. Don't wait until it happens. Act like it now. Walk like that person, talk like that person, act like that person, and you'll become that person. It's got to start inside.
Makes sense. Bob, we can't tell you how much we appreciate you taking time. We know how busy you are with the company, so we really appreciate it. It's always great to see you. Well, we know we love you. And thanks, sir. Thanks so much for doing this.
My pleasure. Good meeting you, Tom.
You too. You're a great inspiration. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to Leadership Now, WealthWave's official podcast. If you like this episode and want to hear more, check out wealthwave.com/podcast or Leadership Now on iTunes. Join us each week to grow as an entrepreneur and succeed as a leader in the financial business with WealthWave.